You gotta go preach now.
Yeah, we're going to do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, George.
No problem, anytime.
Wow. And that was the sermon right there about beard growth and how you should all do it. Yeah, Romans 8, grow a beard. I like that. And all the good luck. So I'd be getting, Josh, good luck tonight. I'm like, where am I? Like, are you guys going to kill me when I'm done or if I don't do okay? Like if you're a first century preacher, yeah, good luck. Like, hope you don't die at this. Like, you know, they needed that. We're in Canada. I think we're going to be okay. So about a month ago, Drew told me he wasn't going to be here, and he asked me to preach. And something that's been on my mind a lot lately, I'm getting older. I'm kind of feeling it. I know everyone's like, you're not old. You know what? I know I'm old because my iPod has about 10,000 songs on it. No joke. I bought an iPod like 5-6 years ago. It's 180 gig. You can't get them that big. It has 10,000 songs on it. And I listen to about 5 bands. All the rest of it, I'm like, what was I thinking when I downloaded this? This is retarded. And like any of the new music that comes out that like I hear about from like the students here, like, oh, check this out. I'm like, this is horrible. And I put it on my iPod. It's just another band, another album with like 10 garbage songs. But anyways, I'm getting older and I'm at the stage of my life where me and my wife are talking about kids, and well, that's not like a. There it is. No, not even close. I'm not pregnant, and Emma's not pregnant. No, but we're kind of, you know, we're toying with the idea, you know, which gets me thinking about family and legacy and where I've come from and my family history, the roots. And, yeah, thinking about all that, the family that I come from is just this weird conglomeration. It's this mess of families. On one side of my family, we have this very, I come from a line of very proud and hardworking guys. They were laborers. Like, I'm talking, like, a couple hundred years. No one went to school. Everyone, like, got through, like, part of school, dropped out, and they just became, like, yeah, like laborers. You guys know what laborers are? No, not even steel workers. Not coal. No. Lumberjacks? Maybe. Yes, actually the red in the beard comes from that side of the family. No. No Vikings. And, pardon me? And that side of the family, long line of laborers, guys that would just show up. They dropped out of school, they started working, they were hardworking, but they were also very proud, very prideful people. They're very proper. They'll open the door for you, they'll sit down at the table and take their hat off for dinner, but a very proud side of the family. They got it all together from the outside when you're looking in. And then I come from this other side of the family that's just a complete wreck. Seriously, I come from a line of bikers, drug addicts, alcoholics from Louisiana. Seriously. Yeah, and I mean, that's where, actually I found this out about a month ago. Does anybody know the Métis? Do you remember learning that in history class? Like Indians and like Scottish or something? They mixed together and they got shipped down there during some kind of like, they were shipping them down there. Yes. Yes, thank you, the Acadians. They were shipping them down to Louisiana. Anyways, yeah, that's the other side of the family. You know, drug dealers, bikers, very, you know, just into the wrong things. Pardon me? Thank you for giving me all this input, Kyle. But that's the other side of the family. And I know, like, being at this stage of my life, you know, thinking about what kind of father am I going to be, what kind of legacy am I going to pass down to the next generation? And tonight, my sermon, it's called Dirty Roots and the Call of God. And we're actually going to be looking at Genesis 12. So if you have a Bible, I see a couple iPads, iPhones, Blackberries, Jesus help them. Go to Genesis 12. Dirty Roots and the Call of God. No, it's not by Maylene or anything else. Thanks. Genesis 12, we're going to go 1 to 4. The Lord had said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, your father's household, to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you." So Abraham went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. That's Lot. That's a name. Kind of cool name. Lot went with him. Abraham was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. So I think four points. I got 2 points with two sub-points. Yeah, math, thank you. I don't know. There's going to be, like, I guess, three all together. So the first part is going to be the call. We're going to look at the call. This is verse 1. So in Genesis 12, we see something that's really crazy here. The thing that jumps out at me is that God calls Abram, even though he isn't looking for God. If you read that section just before and just after that, he's not searching for God. He's not in some kind of desperation crying out. He's not in a cool church service and God speaks to him. He's actually in the land of Haran with his family, and God shows up and asks him to leave and go. Now, what stands out about this is that Abraham, if you read prior to this, you learn he's actually from a land called Ur. You are. That's nice and simple. Ur, buddy. Do you think they'd be called Urites or Urians? Which sounds?
I
call them Urgots. I like Urgots. Urgots. And most of us, when we think of Abram, we think of the later story about Abram. He gets called. He finally has a son up on the mountain. There's like the sacrifice thing going to happen, and then God intervenes at the last second. He changes his name to Abraham. Anyone know the kids' song? Keep going. Wow. Church, how many was it? 75% of us grew up in church. I hate that song. That's horrible. I was like 13 before I'd ever heard that song. And I was like, what is this? This needs to stop. It's horrible. Don't ever play it on the piano again. This is that Abram, he's actually from the land of Ur, which is actually located in southern Babylon, if you want to look it up on a map. And this is the same Babylon where the people would constantly be opposing God. They would constantly be a thorn in Israel's side and opposing God's people. This is the same Babylon that a few chapters earlier, before Genesis 12, they're actually building the Tower of Babel. Some of us have heard that story before. And they build a huge tower, and they're trying to oppose God. They think they're smarter than God, and it was an actual visual and physical act of defiance to God. This is where Abram is actually from. These are his people. This is the same Abram that comes from there, and wow, I got lost there quick. Seriously. The people. That's where he comes from. We're going to leave it at that. That's where Abram comes from. But those are his people. That's what runs in his blood. That is his family lineage. And God shows up and tells him to go. He says, I have something different from you. For you. So sub-point number one that we're going to look at, God initiates. God is the person who initiates in this. Like I said, he's not looking for God. He's not in any kind of desperation crying out. God actually shows up and speaks to Abram and tells him, you need to go. I have something different for your life. And what's crazy about this, too, Abraham would have been used to going to specific temples, to specific gods, to offer specific sacrifices, to hear or have a vision. And yet this God doesn't show up in a temple, doesn't show up in a worship service, doesn't show up in any kind of way that he would be used to, and actually speaks to him and tells him, you need to go. I have something different for you, for your life. God initiates. Subpoint two is he does it in spite of Abraham's background. Abram, I keep saying Abraham, it's Abram. If I say it, just same guy, okay? Abram, he does it in spite of Abram's background. Shows up, I want you to leave your country, leave your people, leave your home, your job, your socioeconomic status, where you fit in the world. I want you to leave everything you know because of what I would have on your life. Abram is from a country, like I said, that serves multiple gods through all kinds of ritualistic and sacrificial ceremonies. And he doesn't yet know God. He doesn't serve the God of the Bible. He doesn't go looking for him. And yet God is the one who shows up and says, I have something different. He does it in spite of his past, where he comes from, the problems and maybe the things in his life that he's picked up serving other gods and passed down to him. He completely bypasses that, and God says, you got to go. I have something for you. We're going to look at verses 2 and 3, the promise. So the verse 2 and 3, I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. This part seems kind of obvious. The verse after that, we get told he's 75. Hey, old man, you're going to be the father of many, of a nation. You're going to have many sons of and I want you to leave. And by the way, your barren wife that hasn't been able to give you kids up until this point, you're going to have a kid. Dang. Can I get a dang? Dang. This is where most people would have you focus. That the fact on Sarah, that's Abram's wife, that not being able to bear a child in that day would be, you know, something culturally shameful. The woman would feel guilt. The man would be like, oh, my family name isn't going to be carried on. Let's just go back to Ur and die. And family names, by the way, back in the day, I mean, if you read them in the Bible, it's not like you had, like, Joe Smith or, like, you didn't have names like that. It would have been like, you know, Abram, son of Terah, the blacksmith. The blacksmith or, you know, woodworker. No, that'd be like modern day, my name, I'd be like Josh, son of Tony, the metalsmith worker. I know, it sounds way cooler. So, I mean, to not have your family name pass on. Where? In your country? But I want you to focus on not on the craziness of the promise, but on the fact that God is the one making the promise happen. It's God who's constantly saying, I will make your name great. I will bless you. I will make you into a nation. It's all God that's making. The promise is crazy. Promise is amazing. But it's God who is making the promise happen. Yeah, that's going to be subpoint 3. God doesn't just bless you so that you can have a good life. God actually blesses you so that you can bless those around you. God blesses you not so that one day you can kick back and go, man, I had a great life. I got a really big house. I have somewhat of a nice car driving my red Civic. I got a nice little dog that I can't bring in the car. Pardon me? No, because my dog is stupid and she throws up if I take her in the car. It's like, seriously. Emma like hops in the car and wants to listen to country music and thinks she's like in a country music video. And like, let's have the dogs hanging out the window. I'm like, you can't even put the dog in the car without her starting to throw up. She sucks, but she was free. Anyways. God doesn't just bless you so that one day you can look at your life and go, look how well I'm doing. God blesses you so that you can in turn bless others. What God places on your life, he does so that you can shift the atmosphere around you and affect people in your world. You're each of you have your own small little bubble of a world with your own friends and family and people that you influence. And God blesses you so that you can shift that atmosphere around you. I'm going to jump to point four. Because when God blesses you, he does so to reveal himself and for you to reveal him to others. See, when God makes the promise to Abraham, he does so, it's through Abraham that he would bring about the nation of Israel, and one day he would bring Jesus Christ into the world. And it's through Jesus Christ that the sins of the world would be forgiven. That's the crazy thing, that he makes a promise to Abram that one day he would be the father of a nation, and that nation is going to be the nation that brings the Savior of the world. The blessing that God planned to bring about through the people that Abraham would bear lineage to is to reveal himself. The whole Trinity thing, Father, Son, Spirit. God makes a promise to bring Jesus, who's also God, into the world to save the world. And it's God is constantly saying to Abraham, I will bless you. I will make your name great. In other words, I will do what I have promised in order that you can participate in what I'm doing in the grand scope of things. God does so to right the wrong and to fix what had begun in Eden. All right, write this down. Proto-Evangelion. It's not Latin. I think it might be Greek, but I'm not sure. Google it, because I had to, because I spelt it wrong about 6 times. Proto-Evangelium. Give it a second. No, it's not a Transformer, and it's not from Gundam. Proto-Evangelium. It's the first good news. It's the first gospel that we hear in the Bible. It happens in Genesis 3:15. And that verse says, "And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your offspring and hers. He will crush your head, and you will strike his heel." That's the first promise of redemption, that God is actually going to do something that had gone so wrong. When God makes us promises, when God promises Abram to be part of the grander scope of things, when God promises things to us, when God invites us to be part of what he's doing. Verse number 4, I just wrote, it says go. Verse 4, so Abraham went as the Lord told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old, and he set out from Haran. He was just kind of camping out there. It's part of the land of Ur. That's where he was. So I wrote, get up and go. It doesn't matter your age, your background, what kind of family you're from, the blood in your veins, none of that should matter, because the promise of God is on your life, and he is calling us, each and every one of us, not randomly, but specifically to specific things. God sent his own son to become a man, to actually take on the sins of the world. God enters history to do something about what had gone wrong. God promises Abram that he's going to be part of something. God is calling us to be part of something bigger. C.S. Lewis wrote, In the Christian story, God descends to reascend. He goes down to come up again and bring the whole ruined world up with him. I love that last part. The whole, like, I mean, we got it pretty good in Canada, but if you really look at the grand scope of things, the world's kind of messy. Everyone agree? So don't wait. Don't be held back by circumstance, by family history. Where you're going or where everyone around you thinks you should be going life. Don't be held back from that, the life that God would have you. Take hold of what God would have for you and be who he's called you to be, because that is meant to shift atmospheres around you, to change people's lives, to speak into others' lives. That is the end of my sermon. So we're going to pray. We might lead another song. And there might be some leaders up at the front if you want to talk. If you're new and this freaked you out, please come and talk to us. I just found out someone once didn't come back because we had candles, which is ridiculous. I thought we were being like cutting edge and like cool and indie. We had like this acoustic worship with like candles and people got freaked out. God, I thank you for Vintage. I thank you what you've done in Vintage over the past 5 to 6 years that I've been around, 6 years since Drew's been around. The lives of these students, I thank you for each and every one of them. I thank you that you've promised, for the promises you've made in Scripture and for the call that you've put on each and every one of us. To be a specific person, and you've given us each a specific calling on our lives. And God, I pray that we would take hold of that, not loosely, but we would take hold of it and we would run with it, and we would pursue it with everything in our lives, and we would do so diligently to press in and grow in relationship with you, God. So I thank you for Vintage, and I just pray over each student, God, that they would grow in relationship and grow closer with you, and that they would pursue the call and the promise that you've set out. In your name, amen.